You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. During the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago brings you conversation about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Welcome to Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dish with the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office. Happy to be with you on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. Every Saturday morning, we bring you highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air throughout the week from 8 to 9 in the morning on 750 AM. As many of you know, there is much activity going on throughout the Archdiocese regarding the Renew My Church initiative. This past Monday, Holy Name Cathedral Rector Father Greg Sackowitz and Graziano Marcheschi talked with the Cardinal's delegate to Renew My Church, Father Jason Malavi, and Father Bob Gilbert, one of our pastors, who has some very personal insight on the Renew My Church initiative.
So we're speaking this morning with Father Jason Malavi, Cardinal's delegate to the Renew My Church strategic initiative, and with Father Bob Gilbert, the pastor of St. Joachim Parish. Father Bob, so I'm sure, you know, I've known parishioners from St. Felicitas, St. Joachim, and St. Albi over the years, and like all parishioners, they love their parishes. So I'm sure that there's a degree of grieving, a sense of loss that people are going through as they look towards the future, because the future is always uncertain. You never know exactly how things are going to come together, how you're going to feel a year from now. But tell us, what's the plan? What is going to happen as these parishes are being united into what is currently St. Albi, and will be known by a new name at some future point?
Sure, yeah. So the plan that we came up with was the three parishes, all, I guess, technically closed. June 30th of this year is their last day operating as three separate parishes. We open as one new parish July 1st of this year. Father Paul Whittington, a wonderful man, a Dominican, is coming in. He will be the pastor of that parish. Father Tom Jackson, another fellow Dominican, is coming in to be the associate. And Father Patrick Wangai is staying on. He's currently the associate at St. Albie's. For a period of 6 months to a year at the most, there'll continue to be worship at all three worship sites. And then after that period of time, all worship will take place at what is currently the St. Albi Parish.
Under a new name, then?
Under a new name at some point. We were just filling out ballots yesterday, voting on potential names for the new parish. So that's where we're at. So they're calling this kind of the, Jason would know better than I, the number of the phase, if this is phase five of, or the rollout phase, or implementation, or whatever we're calling it. But that's where we're at now. So I've been with the people up until this point, but then I will be moving on to my next assignment next week.
And so, in all honesty, Bob, this has to have been like a tough road for you and the people. I mean,
sure.
You have to be honest.
Yes, and I think you need to acknowledge that the grieving is real. Give people time to do that. But we also have to get to a point where we trust in the Lord, because it's a lot bigger than any of us. But certainly, it was certainly a challenging time, and there were certainly things we learned. We were, other than the very first pilots, we were the ramp up grouping, so we're the first people to go through this. So that's also a bit of a challenge. We needed to remind people that it was not entirely about dollars and cents, because I got that a lot. We have money in the bank. All these parishes have money in the bank. Why don't they leave us alone? We have money in the bank. That it's not about finances. I mean, certainly it's a part of it, but that's not the be all and end all.
Well, I think you said it best, Bob, before the break, when you said this is called Renew My Church, Not Save My Parish. And that is a great, great line. And
well, I think we all know that life is marked by gains and losses.
Mm-hmm.
And what distinguishes them is, I mean, you know, they're all grace-filled. All moments are grace-filled. And what distinguishes us as disciples is whether we can accept the grace of the losses as well as the grace of the gains.
Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful line that goes like this. Grieving is a process. Recovery is a decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful line. Grieving is a process. recovery's a decision. In grieving, we must. You lose a loved one, a parish, loss of a job, children going off to college. There's all these losses in our lives, the big ones and smaller ones, and it's how we respond. And so now, so Jason, what Bob is describing, you're seeing this throughout the whole archdiocese.
That's right. You know, when groupings are activated, we've got about 15 groupings that are activated. They really take a look at what is the best structure that's going to support their spiritual lives, then their parish vitality for moving forward. And so we find that these groupings and some individual parishes in the midst of the grouping are having to make some tough decisions. The most extreme would be, as Father Bob and Father Greg are experiencing, the most extreme is having a parish close over the course of some time. Another possibility would be that one or two parishes share one pastor. We've not had to do that much in the Archdiocese, but those days of not doing it are over, and more will be having one pastor watch over two communities.
Jason, I have to say this and put in perspective. You know, Bob, you and Jason in the seminary in the 90s, 80s, I was in the seminary in the 70s, 71 to 79. This is true. When I was ordained in 79, 31 men for the Archdiocese of Chicago, we were the last large class. Our class would talk to each other and say, if we are lucky, we'll become pastors at the age of 55. Because we did the math moving forward with all the number of priests in the Archdiocese, we looked at each other and said, we'll be associates for about 30 years before we open up to be a pastor, and yet ordained in 79, in the mid to late 80s, things started changing quickly. So when I was on the faculty at Niles College Seminary, and then you, Bob, become a seminarian and the college level, Jason becomes a seminarian, we could already tell there that it's not going to be 55 for your day, but much, much sooner. And to let our listeners know, with the last class ordained 31 men in 79, the class of 80 was 20. After the largest class has been 16, we ordained last month 7 men for the Archdiocese. Great men to ordain 7.
We'll have Father Jason on every month with Renew My Church updates, and you can get all the latest information on Renew My Church by going to our website, archchicago.org. Also on this past Monday's program, Father Gregan Gratz talked with the Vice President of Mission for Catholic Extension, Joseph Boland, about the newly launched Family Reunification Fund.
Right now, we're speaking with Joe Boland, who's the Vice President of Mission for the Catholic Extension Society, a 100-plus-year-old organization founded here, was it founded here in Chicago?
It was.
It was founded here.
Quigley.
And it's located here. The president is one of our senior priests here in the Archdiocese of Chicago.
Tremendous priest, Father Jack Wall.
Who's used to be the pastor of Old St. Pat's and going strong at age 75. And a young person like Joe Boland, committed to this mission. Joe, tell us how Catholic Extension raises the great funds with which it blesses so many people and so many churches around the country.
Sure. It's done in a variety of ways, in fact. Before I tell you that, I should note to you that in terms of the financial need of the places we work with, sometimes this statistic helps quantify it, that if you added up all of the financial assets of the Archdiocese of Chicago, they do not equal the assets of the 90 quote-unquote mission dioceses that we work with. And so there's a...
That's amazing.
They're just on a kind of a different playing field when it comes to financial resources and access to philanthropy, which is why we exist. And so some of the ways that we help raise support for them is through our magazine. You know, we have since 1906 put out a magazine that tells a story of what's happening in the Catholic Church throughout the country. And many people through generations know about that magazine, read it, and send in their support to Catholic Extension. Many wonderful and generous people decide to leave us in their will, and that has been a strong base of support for us to support so many Catholic activities in our country for those who have left that great legacy to us. But, of course, we also sell calendars. Many people know that there's calendars that are in the back of their church that are offered. That's actually what we like to call the equivalent of the Catholic Girl Scout cookie, because when you buy those calendars, they help underwrite and support the mission of Catholic Extension. So it's individual giving. There are no government grants for Catholic Extension, and there are no national collections done by the USCCB for us. Everything is done through individuals and groups of people who feel motivated and committed to our mission.
Now, maybe for a minute, Joe, talk about the Family Reunification Fund that has been launched in response to the human tragedy unfolding by the borderline.
Yeah. So, as I said before, we've been involved in the U.S.-Mexico border region for the entire duration of the history of Catholic Extension. It's an incredibly important region of the United States, and so Catholic Extension just in the past year alone has provided $2 million to support various ministries out there. It is one of the poorest areas of the country. It's one of the most densely Catholic areas of the country. It's one of the areas of the country that is growing the fastest, has the youngest age of Catholics. I think the average age of a Catholic in the Diocese of Brownsville, Texas, is 26 years old. There's an incredible vibrancy there. But the other reality that is certainly there that the church has to pay a lot of attention to is that really the border region in many respects is kind of the new Ellis Island, if you will, for the United States. It's the area of the country where many newcomers to America, especially asylum seekers, are coming into this country, and they are fleeing violence. And they are fleeing terrible situations in their home country, hunger, war, persecution, you name it. And the church has a strong presence of outreach into that community, as Father Greg, you witnessed last year when you were down there with us with Cardinal Supich. And it's always been our privilege to be part of that effort to help the church reach the poorest of the poor, to help reach those fleeing situations of violence who have nowhere else to turn. And so as we began to witness the new kind of crisis, if you will, that is unfolding as a consequence to some confusing and changing policies that are going on in our very broken immigration system, Catholic Extension decided to launch a Family Reunification Fund. Now, I have to say, the church has been involved in family reunification for eons. In fact, Pope Francis said when he came and spoke to the U.S. bishops in 2015 that no other institution in America has done more for the immigrants and for the cause of family reunification than the Catholic Church. And so we recognize all this great work that's being done, and we know that more people are paying attention, thankfully, to the great misery and the great suffering that is happening among these newcomers to our country. And so we launched this fund to appeal to any generous soul that would be willing to support the church's very heroic efforts on the front lines to give comfort, to give aid, and to give assistance to those who are in need of it the most, our immigrants and asylum-seeking brothers and sisters.
We're talking with Joe Boland about some of the efforts of Catholic Extension on the southern border. Joe, you've probably been up close and seen this tragedy right up front, particularly the trauma of children being separated from their parents. Give those of us who haven't been able to see it a sense of what that's like and why Catholic Extension is working so hard to reunite these families.
Yeah, I think tragedy is a good way to really describe what's going on. You know, as I was just describing before the break, you know, the people who are coming, who the church is receiving, they have not come to the United States by choice. I think that's one of the misconceptions, you know, about this whole phenomenon. Many of these people were forced to flee their homes. They didn't want to.
Now, Joe, why?
Because of violence, because of war, because their life was in immediate danger. And so they're being sheltered by the Catholic Church. And I to help give an example of what that looks like, I have a little quick two-sentence story here that came in a thank you letter from one of the shelters that we were able to support last year thanks to the partnership of one of the parishes in the Archdiocese of Chicago, St. Teresa of Avila in Lincoln Park. And they supported a shelter, and we got this thank you letter in the mail at Catholic Extension. And in it, the Catholic sister who runs the program was telling us some of the stories of the people she received. And I want to give you the story of Anna from Honduras. And Anna said this. She said, "My 12-year-old daughter was kidnapped by a Honduran gang. 8 months later, her bones were sent to me. I have escaped with my 7-year-old daughter, and La Posada has welcomed us. We are," and that's the name of the ministry we're supporting, the shelter. "We are safe and loved. Thank you, God, and thank you, La Posada." Now, imagine that woman escaping her life, and she's escaping with her one surviving daughter. And this is a true story. This happened last year, and actually, Father Greg, you and I met her last year.
Yeah, I remember that.
Why are these gangs performing such atrocities? Why would they kidnap a 12-year-old girl and send her remains back to her mother?
What many of these people will say is the gangs prey on poor people like Anna to extort money. Basically, pay us money in order for safety. And the minute that you can't pay, they turn against you and commit these atrocities. It's a horrible situation.
They prey on the poor.
That's
insane.
That is exactly what's happening in many of these countries. And so these people are fleeing their lives. They didn't want to leave their homeland, but they felt they had no other choice. And
see, so I think, Joel, that's the key, this part of the program is that when we hear about people coming, you know, over the border, oh, they're just coming, I think it needs to be better and clearer known and better known. They are fleeing for their lives. Not they want to come, but stories like you just shared about Anna, that's why they're coming.
Exactly. And so now imagine you're Anna and you're coming with your surviving daughter, and then you're separated from your only surviving daughter at the border, which is what the policy we just put in place would do. Which has been reversed, and who knows what's going to happen. But it's creating more suffering and more misery for people who have already endured such atrocities. And so for people like Anna, the ability just to be able to stay united with her surviving family members is something that is so important. And so that's what the church has been advocating for. That's what the bishops have been advocating for. And this is also why Catholic Extension is creating this Family Reunification Fund, to make sure that we are empowering these shelters, these ministries, this wonderful work of the Catholic Church and Catholic religious orders, to be able to do everything in their power within the scope of the law to defend and to advocate on behalf of those who have no voice and who are defenseless and vulnerable, who are fleeing violence, and to do everything that they can to give these people comfort and aid and unification.
Is the government of Mexico at all interested in trying to help these folks? Is there any way that Extension could create some safe havens, you know, on the south side of the border so that people can be processed in a way that doesn't create this separation? Of course, the policy has been reversed now, but like you said, we don't know what's going to happen. But isn't it possible for people not to have to put themselves in that kind of jeopardy where they might get separated from their children?
Yeah. Unfortunately, in many of the countries that they're going through throughout Central America, the journey is dangerous with every international border that they cross. And, of course, these people are considered illegal, undocumented, you know, travelers in those countries as well. And they're also subject to horrible abuses and situations of violence as they pass through these other countries.
I remember especially, Joe, when we were down at the border there in that gymnasium, when those people are traveling to those countries, they are petrified regarding the cartel and don't get into their lanes.
That's exactly exactly it. So there's drug traffickers. Unfortunately, there's sex traffickers as well. And so to answer your question, the Catholic Church is doing a tremendous job all along the way to create shelters and safe havens throughout Latin America. A big shout out to the Scalabrini congregation, who does a lot of work with migrants.
For more information on Catholic Extension and on the Family Reunification Fund, go to CatholicExtension.org. Our next highlight comes from our Black Catholic Initiative radio program. We'll get to that after a short break.
What does the gift of hope look like? It's an abandoned young woman with two young children searching for help. I'm Maggie at Catholic Charities Housing Services. As we worked with her, she blossomed before our eyes. She wrote a book, married, and often returned to say hello. You see, we believed in her, and she trusted us because, for us, this isn't just a job. It's a calling to be Chicago's Good Samaritan. Care to help? Visit CatholicCharities.net.
We invite you to watch Catholic Chicago this weekend, featuring a conversation with Cardinal Blaise Cupich and video highlights from across the Archdiocese. Here's host Todd Williamson.
We'll hear from people and ministries that benefit from the annual Catholic Appeal. We'll take you to the inaugural Mass for St. Joseph Chapel at the Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. We'll show you highlights from the ordination ceremonies of both our deacons and our new priests. And we'll get an inside look at how pastors are selected for parishes across the Archdiocese.
Watch Catholic Chicago Friday at 7 p.m. on Chicago Loop Cable, Channel 25, and Sunday afternoon at 3 on the Comcast Network, Channel 100.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 a.m. This past week, Deacon John Cook visited with a former member of the Archdiocese of Chicago's social justice team, Adrienne Curry, who's taken her expertise to the Diocese of Youngstown, Ohio.
Well, this morning's guest audience is someone who's been on our show many a times. In fact, she used to act as an emergency guest when she worked here at our offices. Miss Adrienne Curry, how are you? You couldn't hold back, huh?
No, I couldn't. Oh, those were fun times.
Well, good morning to you. How are you in Youngstown, Ohio?
I'm well.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, and thank you for joining us a whole hour earlier than what you might be accustomed to. But
no, actually, I'm an hour ahead of you.
Are you? That's right. We said that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So you got a little sleep in.
Yeah.
All right. So how long has it been, Adrienne? You know, it seems like it's been a little while. I just don't know how long it's been since you've been away.
6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
So it has been a while. Yeah.
I spent 4 years in Lexington, Kentucky, and I've been here too.
Okay. So what brought you to Youngstown?
The job of social action director.
Okay. And so for those of us who are listening, of course, Ms. Curry is the social action director, right?
Yes.
And that's for the Archdiocese of...
For the Diocese of Youngstown.
Of Youngstown, correct. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing as the social director, director?
Well, I'm the Catholic Relief Services Diocesan Director. I'm the Catholic Campaign for Human Development Diocesan Director. I do advocacy, rural life, prison ministry, Black Catholic ministry, and justice education, and anything else that Bishop Murray throws at me.
And speaking of Bishop Murray, he was quite ill just a couple of months ago, we learned. So how is he doing?
He's doing much better. He started his second round of chemo yesterday.
And Adrienne, do us a favor. Share with us what was discovered or what was his
He was diagnosed with acute leukemia, and he went through 30 days of chemo at Cleveland Clinic. And then they monitored him, you know, and checked his blood levels and whatnot. And he's generating blood cells, you know, good blood cells. So now it's time. He's home. And so he'll go a week, have a week of chemo and just have to go back in to monitor.
Okay.
So that's the stage he's at now. But he's doing well. He's not at work, of course, and he's not really receiving visitors. But every day one of the priests goes to see him and takes some cards and well wishes, and he's been in contact.
Well, of course, you know, he's well-loved all around the world, and especially here in Chicago. I know people are very fond of Bishop Murray, so we're happy to hear that he's doing well. You know, I'm a little surprised, though, to hear that, you know, he developed this acute leukemia at this stage in his life.
Actually, it's not uncommon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not uncommon.
And that's what I wondered, if it was uncommon, because
no.
I you know, typically you hear that when a person is young, they diagnose
mm-hmm.
that very early.
Yeah, I think it's something that happens more to men around his age.
Okay. And so you said he's doing well. He's back home now. So the diagnosis is that it's clearing up or cleared up. What's going on?
It hasn't cleared up, but he's doing much, much better.
So we just have to continue to pray
yeah,
for him.
Continue to keep him in your prayers.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you know, you've got a good friend here, our engineer Michael May. He wanted to say hello to you. He says that Adrian used to save us a lot on some shows where she would come in last minute and fill in wonderfully.
Yeah, he would call me. He'd say, Julius's guest didn't show up. Can you come down? You always have something. He's about to break out in song. So I would walk down two flights of stairs, and we would have a good time.
Well, you know, our good friend and Deacon Julius Frazier is now with the Lord. And so you bring back memories even of Julius. And, it's kind of hard sometimes. You think about, you know, people who really had a great influence on the Black Catholic Church in particular, and they're no longer with us, but their memory and their spirit is still here. Julius is still here in this studio.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Because he spent a number of years here, you know, hosting the show like I am now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Adrian, tell me something. You know, I don't know much of your background or whatever. Who were some of your influences as you were growing up Catholic?
I didn't grow up Catholic.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
I went to public school.
Where'd you go?
I went to Burnside Grammar School, MacDade Grammar School, back to Burnside.
I remember Burnside. Where was that at?
It was on the other side of Tule Park.
Right, south side.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then I went to Harlan High.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, of course. That was
and
a good school back then.
Yeah. I went to U of I.
Okay.
In Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
And my Catholic education began when I was at CTU.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you also attended CTU.
Yes.
Were you a Toton Scholar?
Yes, I was.
Of course you were.
Of course.
You know, we had Christine Riley on just last week and talked about her journey to being the director of religious ed.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you are, another fine student who has turned out and doing great work. And so how was that experience at CTU?
It was wonderful. I mean, when I went, the school was still on quarters, and I was working full-time and going to school part-time. So it took me 7 years to get my MDiv.
Yeah, I think she said it took her 6 years, so it took you seven.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking commitment, man, and perseverance.
Yeah, and half of those were at night.
Wow. And so how many hours of credit did you carry? How would that be semester by semester?
I took two classes each quarter.
Each quarter, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you for that. You stuck with it, and now you got a Master's of Divinity.
Yes.
Thanks to Deacon John and Adrian for that segment. Next up, we explore the liturgy of the church and how it relates to social justice. We'll have that after a short break.
You don't know me.
I was a nobody struggling on the Chicago streets, stopping in occasionally to get a meal at Catholic Charities. Now I'm an addiction counselor at Catholic Charities. They changed my life. I know the power of having someone believe in you. I'm grateful to be a part of Chicago's Good Samaritan offering hope for over 100 years. Care to help? Visit CatholicCharities.net.
The Cemetery Ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 44 Archdiocese of Chicago Catholic cemeteries willing to help you in your time of loss. Call 708-449-6100 or visit CatholicCemeteriesChicago.org. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. Every Saturday from 9 to 10 AM, the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Thanks for letting us be part of your morning. Now again, Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review, where we bring you highlights from Archdiocese of Chicago radio programs that air Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on WNDZ 750 AM. Our next highlight comes from our Focus on the Liturgy program. And this week, Todd Williamson and Danielle Noe focused on the liturgy as it relates to social justice.
Love is stronger than hate. Light is stronger than darkness. Life is stronger than death. Victory is ours. Victory is ours.
It is truly right and just, our duty and our salvation, always and everywhere to give you thanks, Father of mercies and faithful God. For you have given us Jesus Christ, your Son, as our Lord and Redeemer. He always showed compassion for children and for the poor, for the sick and for sinners, and he became a neighbor to the oppressed and the afflicted. By word and deed, he announced to the world that you are our Father and that you care for all your sons and daughters.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Liturgy here on 750 AM. I am Todd Williamson from the Office for Divine Worship with the Archdiocese of Chicago.
And I'm Danielle Noe from Liturgy Training Publications, also with the Archdiocese.
And we open the show with the preface to the Eucharistic Prayer for Various Needs and Occasions, number 4. Mm-hmm. The title of that one is
Jesus Went About Doing Good.
And the reason we did that is because we're going to discuss today an area that we've not given a whole show over to before, but we are this month. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of liturgy and justice, mm-hmm. how the liturgy calls us to live the gospel values. And that's just seems to be so needed today.
It is.
With everything going on in the world, in the country, and the struggles that we're having, it's in the air. And so we want to talk about how does liturgy speak to the struggles that we face, and what does the liturgy call us to?
We've talked about on the show numerous times how liturgy is always connected to our life, our daily life, that it's not some segregated time of prayer. We go an hour on Sunday and that's it. Go back to our normal life. There's always a continuity mm-hmm. between liturgy and life. Liturgy sends us out, of course, on a mission. We hear in the final dismissal texts of the Mass to go and announce the gospel of the Lord. And to announce the gospel of the Lord means that our life itself should reflect the gospel, should reflect Christ. And so we go forth and we live lives of love, charity, peace, justice. And then it sends us back into the liturgy again to be renewed, to be strengthened, to be formed in that gospel message so that we can continue to do that again and again and again. There's always this circular nature to liturgy, whether we're flowing into the liturgical year, whether we're going from Sunday Mass into the world and coming back in. It always leads us to a deeper participation in the liturgy and in the world. And, you know, the I've always wished, now the Constitution on the Sacred Liturgy was, of course, the first document of the Second Vatican Council, and that document emphasized the full conscious and active participation in the liturgy. And I've always wanted to write a document for the Church on the full conscious and active participation in the world.
Right.
You know, so there it goes both hand. There's this internal and external realization and action. You know, prayer is important in every official act that we participate in the official liturgies of the Church is prayer. Every action that we make in the world, because it's supposed to reflect God, is prayerful. Prayer leads to action. Mm-hmm. I think
to behavior, right? Yeah. I mean, to behaving in a certain way, to living in a certain
way.
Exactly. I mean, we've said it over and over that the liturgy and the liturgical life of the Church. Now, we're not just talking about Sunday Mass,
right,
but we're talking about the whole liturgical life of the Church, which includes the seasons too. But all the other liturgies, the formal official rites of the Church, they shape us.
They do.
They shape us, they educate us, they form us, they tell us what we believe, and they point us to how we should act in the world. I mean, the Eucharistic prayer that the preface for which you began,
mm-hmm.
He always went about.
He always showed compassion for children, for the poor, for the sick, and for sinners, and he became a neighbor to the oppressed and the afflicted. And so by word and deed, he announced to the world that you are our Father and that you care for all sons and daughters. If we're created in the image and likeness of God, that's what we're called to be.
Right, right. The texts, the prayers, hopefully the preaching, over time, the idea is they're to form us into a just people.
Right. The whole premise of salvation, the belief in salvation through Christ, is the restoration of creation or Genesis, what God intended from the very beginning. And of course, through sin entering into the world, it was disruptive. Disrupted. That unity was broken, and Christ restores that unity.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal as baptized Christians then is to make the kingdom of God a reality here and now.
I think it's one of Peter's letters, first or second letter of Peter, that talks about being charged to build the kingdom, and that's what the liturgical life of the Church reminds us of. That we talk about what is the kingdom. Well, the kingdom is where what is it? Justice and peace shall embrace, as the psalmist,
Psalm 85,
right? As the psalmist says, it's what, as you say, what God intended, but a world where there is no suffering, where there is no, well, John says it, there will be no more suffering, there will be no sickness, there will be no more death, there will be more sorrow on all my holy mountain, right? That what God intended was for us, everyone, to live in peace and in harmony and in unity and in charity, and that there should be no one.
Right. There should be no injustice in the world.
That suffers nobody, right? And when we celebrate the liturgy, we celebrate, in a sense, we celebrate the liturgy with one foot in that world.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the prophets were very, very firm on this. They talked about if lives of justice and peace and charity were not lived, then the worship that we give is false.
Right.
So think about that.
Joel, Hosea.
Mm-hmm. If we come to Mass every Sunday or any liturgy, we give praise and thanksgiving to God, but then leave the church and do nothing, then what have we done?
Right. Empty prayer, they say. Being baptized in the image of Christ.
Yes.
I mean, that's just another way of talking about that reality, that which we say we believe about the sacraments and about baptism,
right,
in particular,
especially,
then that means living like Christ.
When we were baptized, we were anointed following the immersion with water, or the pouring of water. And when we were anointed with that sacred chrism, we were anointed as priest, prophet, and king. And so we share in the priesthood, the prophetic call, and the kingship of Christ when we are baptized.
Which means sharing in the mission.
Exactly.
And at later on in the show, one of the things that we want to do is actually look at some of the texts that give example of this. But as we said, this message, or at least to be reminded of, is so needed in the world
today.
It is.
And throughout the show, you will hear us coming in and out of breaks with selections of liturgical music that call us to live lives of justice.
Just like this.
Blessed are they, full of sorrow, they shall.
Thanks, as always, to Todd and Danielle for their wonderful perspectives on the liturgy. Next up, we'll hear from the man in charge of violence prevention initiatives for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Back in a moment.
Have you checked out Chicago Catholic lately? Either in print or online, Chicago Catholic has informative and stimulating content, including news from the Archdiocese, beautiful photographs, and a thoughtful column by our publisher, Cardinal Blaise Supich. Editor Joyce DeRiga tells us about our current edition of Chicago Catholic.
Taking a cue from Pope Francis, Catholic Charities opens shower and laundry facilities for the homeless. Students from Parkland, Florida, joined St. Sabina Church for a rally in March to call for stricter gun legislation and an end to violence. And St. Benedict the African Parish in Inglewood has devoted itself to creating sacred art that reflects the Black Catholic experience.
Subscribe now. Go to ChicagoCatholic.com or call 312-534-7777. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Chicago Catholic, a fresh approach to Catholic news.
You don't know me. I was a nobody struggling on the Chicago streets, stopping in occasionally to get a meal at Catholic Charities. Now I'm an addiction counselor at Catholic Charities. They changed my life. I know the power of having someone believe in you. I'm grateful to be a part of Chicago's Good Samaritan offering hope for over 100 years. Care to help? Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. You're listening to highlights of the Archdiocese of Chicago radio programs that are Monday through Friday at 8 in the morning on WNDZ 750 AM. This past Thursday, Father Greg Sakowitz and Graziano Marcheschi visited with Phil Andrew, the person appointed by Cardinal Supich to oversee violence prevention initiatives here in the Archdiocese. Let's take a listen.
One of the great new works within the Archdiocese is an office specifically focused on preventing violence. Obviously, we are not the city of Chicago. We're the Archdiocese of Chicago. But Cardinal Supich really feels that part of our mission is to contribute to the well-being of all of the society, the culture within which we live. And within Chicago, violence happens to be a big part of the culture, sad to say. And we have a former FBI agent, Phil Andrew, who is heading up that effort. So, Phil, how did this come about? Did you ever imagine when you worked for the FBI that one day you might be working for the Catholic Archdiocese?
Not for a moment. I was asked to help when the Cardinal created a working group about 2 years ago. I was asked to provide some subject matter expertise. I've done a lot of work in the area of social media and trying to intervene on violence as it emanates from social media. So I was talking to the committee about that, and that resulted in them coming back with additional questions. And then I really was interested in helping kind of present a vision that I thought that could be a template for the Archdiocese. And then the more I got to know the Cardinal and you know, some of the key folks in the Archdiocese that are already doing some incredibly great work in this space, it was really inspiring.
Well, Cardinal Soup has just taken this area of violence and gun violence extremely seriously on a local level, national level. And so as the new director of this position, Phil, it has to be absolutely daunting and sometimes overwhelming, the whole issue of violence. And how do you put your arms around it?
Yes. Well, that's a great question. So, first, that it does. This seems like a big, hard, tragic, unsolvable problem. And it is very complex. There's no question about it. But the truth is that we do know what works, and that it's really about getting behind some of the effective programs.
Okay, what does work?
What works? Addressing root causes, making sure that folks are well-educated and feel safe when they're in educational settings, addressing things that are going on in people's homes. You know, domestic violence and interpersonal violence is one of the root causes of folks joining gangs and becoming school shooters. So it's really about getting upstream and addressing a lot of the trauma and the mental health needs and the social needs of people long before they turn to violence. But as you can imagine, when folks become desperate, when they're put in a situation where they don't have alternatives, they don't have an opportunity to get a job or to feel some sort of sense of belonging or build a sense of an identity. And this is across the board. This is whether you're talking about folks that are joining ISIS or Chicago gang or becoming a school shooter. These are folks that are disaffected and not connected to their community. So there's a lot that is being done out there in terms of programming that connects folks at all those levels, even folks that have, you know, are returning citizens that are coming out of prisons. One of the difficulties is that, and this is unique to Chicago, is that we have a few isolated areas that are responsible for the greatest amount of the violence. Basically, 20 police districts in Chicago are responsible for the lion's share of the violence. And the difference there is that the rest of our communities have become incredibly safe. It has never been safer to be in the safe communities, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been, we've ignored these other spots, and those programs that are underway really need our support. And the church is in a position to really galvanize a lot of people to get involved in that. Not only just support those organizations financially, but get involved with service, become a mentor. Support one of these organizations with some of your professional skills. Father Dave Kelly runs Precious Blood Ministries. He's been doing a fantastic
job for decades.
Priest. His programs work. He's saving lives there every single day.
He has a residential program for young men.
He has a residential program. He has an outreach program. He has a job training program. He has a counseling program. It is absolutely comprehensive. He has listened to his community in the same way that Father Mike Fleigert has. And what you see is that there's these pockets where folks are doing incredible work. And this is just within the Catholic community. Chicago CRED, Heartland Alliance, Metropolitan Family Services. There are dozens of groups that are doing amazing work in this space. But what it really needs is we need to get off the sidelines. That we all have a responsibility.
But now also these programs take money.
They take money and they need our support. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what is, you know, the Pope calls us to be the field hospital. And he wants us to get proximate. You know, but it's beyond just an image. It's actually an operative statement. It is the solution. If you get close, and this is whether you're a first responder or you're a mentor or you're somebody like Father Fleigert or Father Dave Kelly, you are getting close to the problem. You're getting close to the person that is afflicted, and the solutions then become very clear. And what happens is both hearts change. you change because now you realize that, hey, you know what? This is not an intractable problem. I actually can make a difference. One person can make a difference. And I see this every day. And what happens is somebody that's in a desperate situation realizes, you know what? I'm not alone, that this isn't hopeless. And they back off from this sort of fight or flight approach to the life, that everything is something they run from or they have to commit violence to survive.
You know, Father Kelly, Father Flager, they're both remarkable men. They've done remarkable work, as you said. Do you have to be a remarkable individual like them? What kind of systemic efforts are we initiating to try to make a greater impact? Because obviously those guys have been around for a long time, and they've done everything that, you know, two men can do and built organizations that continue the work that they've done. But obviously we need a whole lot more. So,
well, it would be great to take those two great men and support them with 12 people.
Mm.
And then those 12 people get 12 people. And that's what it's going to take.
So is that
what
we're...
We have not supported their work, all of us.
Yeah.
None of us have done enough to support their great work. If the great work that is already being done by them and others, some of our civic and our interfaith partners, if we would just get behind those programs and make a sustained commitment to both support them financially and with some sweat equity, because yeah. we've got to get involved. The one thing that I know
additional about, personnel.
You can't outsource this. You know, mm-hmm. we're all called to be involved in this. And whether we're talking about school safety or we're talking about changing conditions in Englewood or Austin or, you know, Brighton Park or back of the yard, it requires people to get involved. And there's no just sending a check and saying, yeah, but you take care of it. Because that's just a few folks out there.
Phil, I have a question that is that when you're dealing with gun violence, school situations, gangs, in many cases, is it an individual cry for help, but in a horribly dysfunctional way?
Yes. Well, in fact, it's an evolutionary way. You know, that it's dysfunctional
mean,
in the sense that when you are under incredible pressure, if your neighborhood is unsafe, if your home is unsafe, if you're not sure where you're going to eat, if you're up all night worrying about things, about, you know, how you're going to survive, and then you're expected to come and perform in school, that is a lot of stress. And we all know this in our interpersonal lives, that when the buildup of stress day in and day out without any release, without any ability to rest properly, eat properly, get perspective, learn about what's happening so that you don't have this very narrow idea of where you live.
You snap.
Well, you don't. I don't know. I think that in some cases people snap. In other cases, the behavior that gets reinforced is that the only way for me to survive is to be more and more aggressive, and that's how I get across the street.
Here's a wonderful line I heard many years ago: things we take in quietly come out in noisy ways. Things we take in quietly come out in noisy ways, which means if it builds up, you can make explode. And it comes outward with violence, with anger, and also you mentioned before that whole issue of domestic violence. To be in a home situation where there is verbal abuse, physical abuse, alcoholism, and a child day in and day out in this environment, in that confines, that it's overwhelming.
I had a student a couple of years ago at St. Xavier. He was an athlete. His coach referred him to.
Was he a swim coach?
He was not a swimmer. Basketball player.
Oh, okay.
But his brother had just been shot, standing on his front stoop with his 6-year-old son right beside him. Someone just came up and point blank just shot him. And the boy said, you know, I came here to get away from all that. And there's no getting away from it. It follows me, you know. Here he thought he was in a safe environment, and yet this tragedy, this violence invaded his life. So I can understand what you're saying, you know, about when your whole life is characterized by the fear that at any moment violence could erupt. So as an archdiocese, obviously we don't have the resources of the federal government. We don't have the resources of the city of Chicago. What do we have? What can we do? You know, what are some of the initial efforts that, you're beginning to undertake to try to make an impact?
Well, it's really in three places. One is that I think that we could do a lot to instill a culture of safety. And that really, to me, that's four things. That's one, we need to plan for crises, and we need to understand, and we have to have the right people at the table. And just imagining all the things that could happen and that we need to be prepared for, and thinking and working with our communities to walk through that. That's one key piece. The second piece is to be socially and emotionally informed and to have trauma-informed practices where we are looking at behavior and people more from the lens of what does this behavior mean, as opposed to judging it, isolating it, or trying to always discipline it. This isn't about being soft. This is about recognizing that folks are a product of their environment. And like you say, Father, if somebody coming out of an abusive home or emotionally difficult situations, they're going to be struggling, and they're going to act that out in some ways. And some folks are going to be able to hold that in, and you're going to have to carefully look at it. But being informed in seeing that, and then having a workflow where you can make a referral and get people the help they need, where there's real follow-up. It's not just, hey, you should go get help, but rather, we've got a place for you, and we want you to be part of our community, and we're going to get you help. The third piece is really, we've got to do a much better job of teaching, training, and practicing nonviolence and anti-bullying and conflict resolution. We live in a world that is very fast paced, where an explosion could go off in Nairobi and we can feel the fear of it because it's on our Twitter account. We can feel the apprehension and anxiety about something that happened a half a world away.
Within minutes.
Within seconds, right? So we need to have better coping skills, and that is learned, trained behavior. And we have a fabulous legacy. Faith-based groups like the Catholic Church, nonviolence, and you know, that's what Christ did. He trained a bunch of folks in this methodology of taking a different approach to life that is not about violence.
And then sent them out two by two.
Exactly. And the third piece is really about the fourth piece is really about communication. And this is just creating this culture of safety, that we're much more communicative about it, about facts. The truth is that school shooters, in 66% of the time that they use a weapon in a school shooting, 60% of those guns came from home. Mm. So, if we could eliminate 66% of the shootings just by securing guns in our home, and that's not just like some sort of gun control position. That's for even gun owners, like and guns. And we were talking even before the show about suicides. That making sure that you're responsible about how you maintain a gun in your home, it makes a big difference. Now it's not there to shoot a playmate when somebody's over on a little play date. And it's not available there when somebody wants to commit suicide. And it's not available there for somebody to take and misuse at a school.
Now we need to bring the program to a close. Unfortunately, we could have been on with you, Phil, for the next 3 hours. I want to thank in a very special way Phil Andrew, the Archdiocese of Chicago's new Director of Violence Prevention Initiative. Phil, this has been a fascinating hour. Thank you for joining us. You will be back on the program again soon.
Our hopes and prayers are with Phil Andrew as he pursues his mission for the church and for the greater Chicago community. Thanks to our friends here at Relevant Radio, 950 and 930 a.m., for letting us join you every Saturday morning. We thank you for listening. I'm Jim Dish for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Join us every Saturday morning for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You can stream our programs live or listen to past programs by visiting our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. And please connect with Catholic Chicago on social media.